This is my kind of party. Grab a friend, bring the guns. It's time for the Co-Opticast.
And welcome back to another Co-Opticast. This is Co-Opticast episode number 47 for Sunday, July the 25th, 2010. It is a hot summer's eve here in the Northeast, and Nick and Mike are kicking back, relaxing, and going to bring you the latest news and information on co-op gaming. Mike, how are you this evening?
Trying to beat the heat. Luckily, we had a big thunderstorm roll through and cool things off a bit. So, it's feeling all right now. I mean, we got to beat the humidity next, but I'll take it not being over 100 degrees.
Yeah, it's been a pretty brutal summer in the Northeast. And actually, I think it's been pretty much brutal throughout the country. I saw a few weeks ago when we had that heat wave, like all week, where it was right around 100, that it was something like 80% of the country was in temperatures 90 or above.
Yeah, so, it's pretty nuts.
Yeah. So all that those warm temperatures means that we stay indoors in air conditioning and play video games.
Yes.
And so what have you been playing?
Well, I've actually been playing a lot because my wife and daughter have been out of town for the past week or so, and I've been finding that I actually had a ton of free time before all this business with, you know, raising a family and all that. So I've been mostly trying to figure out what to do with myself, but I've been playing a lot of portable games, Xbox Live stuff, and some old classics. Let's see. I got Deathspank, and I played all the way through that and really, really enjoyed it. Didn't get a chance to check out the co-op, but I didn't really think it would be worth it, so it's no huge loss to me. I mean, you know, if you have your buddy show up in girlfriend mode, it's not really too fun, right?
Yeah, it's just one of those things where, like, it's better than having someone watch you play.
Yeah. You know, they watch you play and they push a button.
Yeah.
Yeah. The game didn't really feel like that would have added too much to it anyway, so I don't feel that it lost much, and I really enjoyed my playthrough for it. And I also played through Limbo, which is better than Braid. I don't care if you disagree with me. it's just pretentious enough that it doesn't tip over the edge of self-wankery that Braid was. And the only bad thing I have to say about it is that I pretty much 100%ed the game in an afternoon. And what that says about, you know, how lazy I was today and my refusal to get off the couch, I don't know, but I think I set aside about 3 hours and cleared the entire game, and then I went back and hit up some of the achievements I missed. And yeah, so it's whether that's worth $15 to you or not is entirely up to you. I can't tell you how to spend your money, but it was worth it for me.
Yeah.
Been playing some more Persona 3 Portable because I love that game and Persona in general.
Someday I will try that game out.
Well, I have multiple copies, like I said.
You've tempted me with it before.
Yeah. I also played, I picked up Dragon Quest IX, and I've been having a lot of fun with it. I'm kind of hit or miss on Dragon Quest games, because I was a really big fan back in the day, like 1-4 on the NES. And I didn't play another one until 8 on the PS2, and it pretty much felt exactly like the games I remembered on the NES, and it put me off, because I felt like RPGs had, you know, stepped forward in time a few decades at that point. So I got a good ways into that and then put it down. And, you know, Dragon Quest IX had co-op, and it didn't look like anyone on staff was going to review it. So I said, well, I like Dragon Quest well enough. I'll give it another shot. And so I picked it up, and it's very much a Dragon Quest game, but the things that I really like about it are the fact that they've pretty much aimed this at the Monster Hunter crowd. Mm-hmm. You know, farming for rare items, you know, there's a whole questing system in addition to the main story where you'll get all these side missions and they reward you with like new and unique loot, and you there's an alchemy system similar to the one in 8, but you build a lot of the rare gear using that. And the multiplayer is actually really cool. You can have up to 4 players. I don't know if it's over the Wi-Fi connection, but you can definitely do it locally. And so basically you drop off all the NPCs you make to be your party members at the nearest inn, and then you can invite anybody within, you know, you can invite any of your friends into the game, and you all hook up, and you can, like, you're not in the same party so much as you, you can group up and wander around, and as long as you're within a pretty generous distance of one another as you're rolling around, you always get pulled into each other's battles. Mm-hmm. And everybody, you know, they have control over their character for their turn. And the bonus to all this is that the player character always has extra abilities that you can use to, like, buff your party and stuff. There's an ability that you can egg on your teammates and say, you can do better, and they'll get an attack bonus. When you're, you know, playing by yourself, you can do it to, like, one ally, and you can use several turns to really power someone up and unleash a super attack. But when you're playing with, you know, 3 other players, you can designate someone as your you know, beast of an attacker and have the other 3 all buff them up really quickly. And it makes it adds a lot of depth to the game that isn't normally there. And they settled a lot of the loot systems by, you know, if you defeat an enemy in combat, everybody gets the item. And it follows you back to your game. And, unfortunately, only the host progress is saved, but all the experience and items and everything else that other party members earn go back with them to their game. So it's probably the best way to handle that, because in an 80-hour JRPG, you know, if you bypass 20% of the game for somebody, it can actually really screw them up because of the way your party members work. Because your party member, it's very much like an MMO where you create your own character and you have a mute protagonist, and the story centers around you and the world that you're affecting. And rather than give you know stock characters presented by the story, you create your own party. It's kind of like Final Fantasy 1, right, where you basically generate 4 characters and go roll through the world. And this, you can have a party of 4, but you can generate any number of combinations of characters. You can, if you really wanted to, you could have a priest that specialized in healing, and you could also create a priest that was more of a melee fighter and switch them out as you need them. Unfortunately, you'd have to level each of those up, but it all combines really well to make a really interesting co-op package, and I've really been enjoying it. Huh. And in addition to that, I hooked up with a buddy of mine. We've been playing through Diablo 2, and he actually came over the other day, and we set up a LAN and played more.
Old school, nice.
Old school, yeah. It's fun as hell. That game, Diablo 3 can't come soon enough, yeah. But Diablo 2 is still awesome. And the fact that when they do those patches, they are still adding things to it.
Yeah,
insane.
Yeah, I wonder if that's like part of like the Blizzard intern program or something, where they just like make the interns work on these 10-year-old games and like add stuff to it or something.
Maybe.
I don't know. But, cool. So, yeah, that's a pretty healthy slate of gaming you got going on there.
And, yeah.
I'm definitely jealous of it, because all my gaming has been in short bursts late at night. But I've been playing a lot of good co-op stuff. Kat and I and Mark at times have been playing through Transformers, War for Cybertron. And if you're a fan of, like, the original 80s cartoon, there's just so many throwbacks to it in the game, and the voice acting is just spot on. So I'm really enjoying that. If I have a complaint with it, it's a bit tough. You think, you know, big hulking, you know, mechanized dudes, robot battles and stuff. you know, it's all action oriented, but the ammo situation in the game is pretty limited. You have to really watch your ammo. So it's kind of, you really have to pick and choose when you want to transform and use the ammo from that mode and stuff like that, and kind of balance that a lot. But the co-op in it is just a lot of fun, because basically what they did is, like, each Transformer is like a different class. So, like, Megatron, for instance, he's a leader class, which means he has, like, an ability to like, suck life away from the other guys into his party and everybody around him in this area. There's a scientist, which I think one of the special abilities they have, which is Soundwave, if you're the Decepticons, he has a healing grenade kind of a thing. Huh. And then, like, obviously their default weapons is different. Megatron has this big, like, ion blast as the default one, and the scientist has kind of, like, a little sniper rifle kind of a thing. And, you know, each vehicle that they transform into is a lot different. So, but yeah, so it actually starts out in the Decepticon campaign, and then it switches over to the Autobot, but you can pick and choose and play them in any order. It's kind of the same story, but different sides of it. So yeah, that's good fun. I played a bit of the survival mode in that game. I can't think what it's called off the top of my head. It's something weird, but there's only two maps in it as far as I can tell, with two more coming this week as DLC. And it's pretty hard as well, but it feels very much actually like Call of Duty's Nazi Zombie mode, because as you do stuff, you earn points, and then those points you can go to little like upgrade stations and decide to buy stuff. And then there's areas you can unlock which have stronger weapons in it, but that allows more areas for more Transformers to come through and swarm you. So, So it kind of follows that Call of Duty model. But it's a lot of fun. The other co-op game I've been spending most of my time with actually is Alien Swarm on the PC.
I really want to play that, but my PC is currently
it's at the doctor's.
On the rocks.
So yeah, if you don't know, Alien Swarm is a free game that Valve released this past week via Steam. It has a full SDK with it, so you can mod the heck out of it. But I've just been playing straight up the straight game, and the best way to describe it, like, I had no idea what it was. If it was just a straight shooter, like top-down shooter with, you know, four-player co-op and you're killing a bunch of aliens and stuff, I'd have been happy, but there's actually a lot of depth to it. You have different classes of characters. I think there's eight characters to choose from. There's four classes. There's a sergeant or a commander class. There's a technician. There's a healer. And there's a heavy gunner. And each one, obviously, can only carry certain weapons and do certain things. The medic obviously can heal people. The technician can hack stuff. And, like, so like, each one of these classes, like, technician especially, is required for some missions. Somebody has to be one because there'll be, like, panels you'll have to hack or, like, doors you have to open, information you have to download, and you couldn't progress any further. And the medic's almost required because when you get into some of the infestation sections where they have like these kind of like little egg things, I mean, think just like facehuggers and aliens, right?
Right.
So these little things bust out and they get on your character. You can't get them off unless a medic comes up to you and heals you.
Huh.
What's kind of funny is the first couple times I played, people didn't know what to do. And so the facehugger jumps on you and you're dying and you're flailing around like crazy. But the thing you're supposed to really do is just stop and let the medic come up to you and heal you. And it took a couple days, but eventually I saw my games like progress from like people like just getting really pissed off to people like being calm and knowing what to do when that happens.
So is it play kind of like Alien Breed, but with classes?
It is. It's a little more tactical though. The heavy gunner class actually can lay down a turret if you want, and you could guard specific areas and stuff. You earn experience for the missions, and then you unlock more guns and more objects and stuff. There's things like trip mines. There's different like sets of armor you can get, like a heavier armor. You can get a personal healing pack. You can get different kinds of grenades. The commander class gets as one. It's like a swarm of missiles you can fire at some of the bigger boss aliens and stuff. And the game is gorgeous. I mean, it's really, really pretty. So yeah, I mean, for free, it's like we're playing it, and it's just like people are like, I can't believe like they gave this away because they could have easily gotten away with charging $20 for it.
I'll tell you why they gave it away. It's to keep you distracted while they don't show you anything about episode 3.
Could be. But yeah, so it really has this Left 4 Dead meets Alien Breed feel. I guess is the best way to describe it. Cool. With that whole little pseudo-RPG thing going on. So I've probably put a good like 3 or 4 hours into it so far. And I think I got my character up to 13 or 14.
Nice.
But yeah, it's a lot of fun. And there's 8 missions in the one campaign. And they have slots for other campaigns. And like I said, it's shipped with all these mod tools. So I imagine there's going to be plenty more coming for that.
It's hope.
I've also played a little bit of Limbo, and I didn't play through it like you did. I got to the end of the demo, and I was like, well, I guess I'll play this. You know, I guess I'll purchase this. This is, you know, worth seeing what's going on. I played maybe another 15 minutes, and I had to go.
Where does that leave you?
So the demo ends after the spider's, like, chasing you.
Uh-huh.
And then you actually, like, kind of fight that spider again, right?
Yeah.
And then I think right after that is where I stopped. So the demo, and I don't want to ruin it, but the demo ends when that spider does something to you, and then it's kind of like, what are you going to do?
Okay.
That's right where it ends. So there's that whole part.
Yeah. Yeah, the fate of that spider is kind of... I had a discussion about the way that game treats arachnids and insects with a friend earlier. It's not nice.
Yeah.
That spider has every right to be pissed at you.
So, and then finally I've been playing Gears 2 this weekend. I've been playing Horde mode of that because of the 20 times experience.
I was going to say, you want your 20 times experience?
I was like, well, the way I figured it was like, well, maybe there's actually like a lot of people on playing. And I haven't checked it out since they updated Horde mode to be public with drop-in, drop-out.
Right.
Like, you know, they always had, like, the ranked one, but, like, if someone would drop out or someone would drop out, you'd be stuck.
Right? Yeah.
But now you can actually drop in and drop out of games. So it's pretty fun, and some of the new maps are really pretty. There's one, I don't know the name of it, but it's, like, a snow map with this big courtyard and stuff, and it's... I played that for a while today with a group of random people, and everyone I played with actually was pretty decent, like in terms of like politeness and stuff.
Yeah.
But I ranked up. I think I was a level 6 when I started, and I ranked up to level 27 in probably, I don't know, an hour and a half of playing.
Jeez.
So yeah, it was pretty hardcore.
I don't think I've played Horde mode since a couple months after Gears 2 came out.
Yeah, well, I had looked at my before I played it. I had looked to see when the last time I played it, and it was last August. So it's been almost a year.
I'd say it's been longer for me. I'd probably say last February or two Februaries ago.
We had a co-op night last summer with some of the devs, so I'm wondering if that's when it was.
That's probably when it was.
Yeah. All right, so that's enough of what we've been playing. Let's talk about news, and let's talk about another big Xbox game that we all know and love, and that's Halo Reach. And Comic-Con, the San Diego Comic-Con, revealed some new details of it, the first being a new versus firefight mode, which is they weren't really clear exactly the numbers, but it's at least 2 versus 2. And so players will take the sides of the Covenant and the Spartans and basically play firefight, but you'll have some human control of the Covenant team. So that should be kind of interesting. I guess it's going to add some longevity to that mode, a little bit above and beyond the already insane amount of customization options for it.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like if you take what firefight is, you know, with the lives and whatnot, and then you make it so that you can kill the other team in addition to the, you know, the AI being able to kill both of you, that seems like it's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, and so the other thing that was announced with this is something called Forge World, which is a sequel to Forge of Halo 3. Forge was kind of like their pseudo-map customizer thing. But Forge World is a little different. What they decided to do is, like, they gave you this huge chunk of Game World. They said there's like five or six distinct areas they designed in it, but the idea is you can kind of carve out a map and customize it the way you want it in that world. They really went above and beyond. They went back and they looked at all the tips and tricks that people were using in Forge to do things they wanted and made it easy. And the maps that they showed kind of made with Forge World are looking really sweet. And in fact, I think they said two of the maps that are shipping with the game were completely created in Forge World.
Interesting.
Yeah. So there's a video we have of up on the site. I mean, it is really like, you can tell it's Bungie's like swan song to the community. And like, you know, we love you. We want this game to be our penultimate like Halo game. And
please forgive us for teaming with Activision. We love you. We really do.
Yeah. I don't know if we'll be able to do any kind of, firefight customization with those maps. They haven't really said, but just the fact that there's going to be all this content out there, you know, all that stuff, like with Halo 3, you can be uploaded and share it. And, one game I actually forgot to mention in the What You've Been Playing thing is last night we played some ODST Firefight for our Waypoint night. And my cousin was over and he had never like really seen it. And I was telling him about our epic, remember our epic like 3 hour long?
Oh yeah, match?
Yeah. So I was telling him about it. So I fired up the stats thing. This was like immediately after we played. And within 2 or 3 minutes, the stats of the matches we had just played were already up on BungieNet.
Yep.
With all like those things. And he was just like, he was blown away. He was like, I can't believe how fast they like process all that information, generate the heat maps and all that stuff.
When you really think about it, they're only processing like, you know, a few kilobytes of data. It's nothing but map points.
Yeah, I guess. But you figure how many people are playing at that time.
They've also got, you know, Microsoft money behind all those servers. They've probably got a farm bigger than, you know, most developers could afford.
Yeah.
You know, processing that stuff. So.
Yeah. Reach is really looking to shape up nicely. I can't believe it's only like 6 weeks away at this point. A little bit longer. If you want to get your true Reach fanboy itch scratched, Microsoft announced a new limited edition Halo Reach Xbox 360 based on the new S model. It's a silver console. It looks really, really sexy. It's got some kind of Halo-esque writing on the sides, but what's really going to get your fanboy panties all moist is...
Oh my.
I went there. When you press like the buttons and stuff, the console actually play Halo-related sounds, like when you do stuff. So, like, the one they gave as the example was you eject a disc and it does the shield power-up noise from Halo.
Huh.
So that'll be interesting, because it does, the new S console does kind of do these little chimes and dings when you open the tray now and
right.
You power it on. So I'll be curious to see what other things they have in that. It's kind of cool. It comes with two controllers, a copy of Halo Reach, and the console for $399. Basically, it saves you like $50.
It's not bad.
No, it's not bad at all. And there's also, you can get the controller separate and you can get a wireless headset too. They're offering in that same theme is available separately. And I actually pre-ordered the controller.
You're such a whore.
I know. Well, I have the ODST one, which I use like all the time. I really like that. And this one looks like it'll match it nicely.
The only Halo merchandise I have like that is my wireless headset. I have the Halo 3 one. Because my local Best Buy ran out of the white ones.
They actually come out August 8th, I think. So they'll actually be out pretty soon if you want to get those before the console hits on September 14th with the game. Back to Gears of War, though. this was a really interesting promotion that Epic decided to do. If you followed the Gears of War games... there's always been a character in the game called Carmine, and he's always kicked the bucket.
He dies a bitch death too.
Yeah. He's the rookie of the game of the squad or whatever, and he always gets wrecked. So, of course, Gears 3 is going to have a Carmine. His name is Clayton Carmine, and he's this big hulking dude with a big gun and stuff. But he's not dead yet. I'm not dead! Instead, what Epic decided to do was put it up to the community and have them basically vote on whether Carmine lives or dies. But the way they're doing this is going to be is to benefit Child's Play, the Penny Arcade charity for children's hospitals. And there's two shirts you can get for your avatar. There's the Carmine Must Save Carmine and the Carmine Must Die or Kill Carmine shirt. So you can get those for your avatar. You purchase them, and all the proceeds go to Child's Play. There's actually real T-shirts you can get that say the same thing. And all those proceeds, again, go to Child's Play. So it's an interesting little thing to involve the community and, you know, make the decision. The word out of Comic-Con was most of the developers were wearing the Carmine Must Die shirt.
Bunch of assholes at Epic.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens there. I wonder if they'll have both in the game. Like, the playthrough of the game will actually, whatever one wins, but maybe have the alternate.
Maybe if you pick the casual difficulty, he lives, but hardcore and above, he dies.
Something like that could be pretty fun.
Because it's, maybe they change other things, like, Marcus and Dom have a bit of a bromance and go skipping through a field of flowers in casual mode, and Carmine lives, and everything's really happy, and Dom, pulls out the photo of his wife from his back pocket, and he looks at it, and he has a vision of the good times they used to have, and he just laughs and puts it back, and Marcus high-fives him, and they walk off into the sunset together. And then, you play on the real difficulty, and everyone dies.
That's deep.
It is deep.
Make it happen, Epic. Make it happen. Moving on, let's talk about Shank. If you haven't seen anything from Shank, it's been around for about, I think, a year or so now. We saw it at PAX last year.
Yeah.
It is a kind of a hand-drawn-looking beat-em-up game. And they're deciding to add a co-op campaign to it, which is a prequel to the game's story.
And your co-op partner is a machete-wielding Mexican. Which, with a gigantic mustache.
Have you seen this is kind of going somewhat off topic, the trailer for Machete?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, I can't wait. So, anyway.
It did remind me of that. And it's curious the timing of this, considering that movie is supposed to come out at some point.
It's actually really close to it. Machete is in September, and this is I don't remember off the top of my head, but it's an early September release.
Yeah.
So they decided to add a full co-op campaign that, complete with cutscenes and story and everything, not just throwing in a random other dude and stuff like that. So that's good, because I know Kat talked to the developer at PAX and was kind of prodding him about it, and he's like, "Hey, we really want to do it, but we don't think we'll have the time."
I don't know.
But they're under EA Partners program.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing EA maybe gave us more cash, and all was well in the world. Let's see. Kinect. It was finally priced, and to nobody's surprise, it was $150. Along with it was a new console announced. Microsoft's on the console announcement spree. It's the same form factor as the S model that was recently announced, but it's kind of equivalent to the arcade SKU from before. It has a 4 gig flash memory drive in it or something like that. And it's a matte black finish instead of a piano black. But otherwise, it's completely identical.
So they do some things that I'd like to see. Like, the 360S has the piano black dust magnet, like the PS3.
Yeah.
Very old school PS3. And I was kind of hoping it would be matte. So the GIMPed console with flash memory has the case I want, but the normal 360S has the internals I want. And, yeah. Come on, guys.
See, I'm a fan of the piano looking at console. As much as it attracts dust, I just think it's a very sexy look.
My PS3 looks gray after like a day and a half.
You know, I gently caress mine every night, so.
Yes, well, that's treading into an entirely different topic.
But yeah, so $150 for Kinect. There is a bundle where you'll get that new console and Kinect, and EverConnect's coming with that Kinect Adventures game that includes a bundle, and that is $299 for the bundle with the console. So you save yourself $50 there. I don't know. $150 is a steep price to ask anybody to pay for this. The bundles might sell okay to a certain crowd, because that's what the Wii came out at, right? $299? Or was it $249?
I don't remember.
I think it was $299 it came out at. But so, yeah, all the bullet points, of course, Microsoft is saying, well, you don't need two controllers, and you know, you got two player out of the box. And when you do compare it direct to, like, a PlayStation Move, you know, if you don't have any of that stuff, the PlayStation Move comes out at $10 more expensive for a full two-player experience.
I'd probably compare it more to crap like, you know, the Rock Band and Guitar Hero packs that are so inexpensive. So if you look at it from that standpoint, albeit there's no games I actually want to play on it, which torpedoes the argument a little bit, but you know, when it's an entire platform that can be adapted to whatever genre they throw at it, rather than, you know, a bunch of plastic instruments that you're supposed to upgrade every year because they improve them.
Yeah,
I mean, it really isn't that expensive, but you know, make a game that more than grandma wants to play. Because Skittles isn't entirely something I want to play unless I can have him go maul Milo.
So I saw a quote, and I don't know who it was from off the top of my head, but it basically said that don't expect much in the way of true hardcore games for the Kinect for 18 months. I really think Microsoft, like, right now is solely focusing on that extreme casual audience. Like, they just, if E3 was any proof, that was the proof right there, is like, they don't care. They don't care what we have to say about it right now. That's not who they're marketing for at all. They know we'll be happy with our Gears of War 3, with our Halo Reach, you know, Fable 3 and all that other good stuff. Kinect is for somebody entirely different.
And that's okay, but, you know, it's weird when you look at their E3 presentation this year, how not really geared towards the people that got the Xbox where it is.
Yeah.
It was, like...
It was split down the middle. It was, like, the first, like, four things they showed was, like, okay, this is totally awesome. And then it was, like, oh, my God, Skittles.
Well, the Cirque du Soleil thing and everything was totally, marketing hyperbole over getting, you know, your 6-year-old to play. Yeah. And that's totally fine, don't get me wrong, but you know, I get the feeling that a lot of the people that own an Xbox aren't the type of people that would play a game like that.
Yeah.
And Microsoft has not marketed it well to anybody else but that audience for a very long time. So the brand awareness, you know, people who know what it is know that it's not like the Wii. It's not something that they can play out of the box. So they essentially damaged themselves from being able to sell it like this. And it's a big uphill fight.
We'll have to see the marketing campaign when it, you know, when the commercials hit the TV and stuff this fall.
Yeah.
Exactly what they show, because I guarantee it's you're going to see plenty of Skittles and you're going to see plenty of that river rafting, grab the stupid little orb game.
Oh, I'm sure, but you know who, all the casual gamers in my family, you know what they all own? They have a DS, they have a Wii, they play their Brain Age and Nintendogs and all that, and they, you know, they play stuff like Wii Fit and Wii Sports Resort on the Wii, and you know, they're happy with that. Why do they need a $300 piece of hardware to play more games?
To be honest, nobody's ever tried it. I mean, nobody's ever really tried to go up against Nintendo. I mean, Nintendo took the risk anyway. So now what they're going to do, I mean, this is, if they were smart, what they're going to do is, here's why we're better than the Wii. This is what you can do with this that the Wii can't do. That's what they're going to do, right? They're going to, we're going to have old school Sega Nintendo battles here. in terms of commercials, I would think.
And I think it's going to play out much the same as the old school Sega Nintendo battles. I mean, you know, who still owns a Game Gear besides me?
I still have one too. It doesn't work very well with that. What is it? There's like six AA batteries.
Six AA batteries. But you know what I'm saying is, you know, going up against Nintendo, directly competing against Nintendo, is not something that Sony nor Microsoft has been doing thus far this generation. They've carved out their own little corner of the gaming market, and they're doing quite well for themselves. But now they're going to say, both of them are investing all this marketing muscle into attacking Nintendo's base now. I think it's a fool's errand.
Yeah.
But I think we've gone over this a little, you know, too much over the past few months. I'm impressed by what Kinect and Move can do. I think, you know, they're good improvements on motion tech. I just don't think either of those companies is in a place to steal Nintendo's audience right now.
Yeah. Yeah, personally for me, I'm looking for Kinect to see what some of the more experienced developers can do in terms of enhancing existing gaming experiences. Things like the Forza folks, you know, using head tracking with racing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There's just been so many things that, as we've been getting closer and closer to the Kinect launch, of like things we've been finding out about it that's like quirkiness. Like, it doesn't really, like, EA wanted to have push-ups in their fitness game, and it didn't really read it too well. So they kind of had to hack it. Like, so you can't really, Kinect doesn't, can't really see somebody laying down very well. And the same thing goes for sitting. Apparently, if you're sitting down, it doesn't really read you very well. So, like a driving game, you technically have to be standing up to be playing a driving game on Kinect.
What I've heard about it is actually if you want Kinect to detect you sitting down, you have to pretty much say only detect someone sitting down or only detect someone standing. Yeah. It's kind of a one or the other thing as far as I've heard, and it's okay, but. You know, it's going to be confusing, I think.
And then there's the whole distance thing. The official product, like specs and stuff, have gone up on Amazon and stuff, and it says it requires at least 6 feet of distance between you and the camera for it to work.
And what about people like, you know, and you've seen my apartment. I have a rather large coffee table in between the couch and the TV, so what's that going to do?
Exactly.
I can't move that out of the way.
Yeah.
Not that I'm buying Kinect, but, you know.
Yeah. So they're going to have a lot of hurdles, I think, to jump over. And I think they might have dug themselves in with it so much and not really thought about the little things that are going to end up being a bigger hurdle.
I mean, I like the idea behind Kinect a lot. And I think that if the rumors about them trying to get it put into PC monitors and HDTVs,
yeah,
like the technology behind it. If that's true, I think it could do a real, you know, it could usher in a new era of, you know, the way we interact with things. But until things like that start happening, I'm not sold.
All right, let's move on. We spent enough time on Kinect.
Such a topic.
Let's talk about Plants vs. Zombies. The official, the game has been officially announced for Xbox Live Arcade. It is coming out this September, and it has a co-op mode. There was no details of said co-op mode. I tried to prod PopCap Games about it, but along with San Diego Comic-Con this week was actually the Casual Kinect conference in Seattle, which is a big casual gaming's conference. So I think everybody was indisposed there, which is kind of why the game was also announced. I don't know. I'm curious of how the co-op mode will work. If it'll just be, you know, both players working on the same.
Well, didn't the achievement say co-op bowling or something like that? Because that's one of the level types in Plants vs. Zombies. Yeah, it's not the main tower defense mode. It's a separate one.
Yeah, I don't think it did say. I didn't think it just said something about co-op. I'll have to look. Let's move on though. Get through some of this stuff here. And everyone's favorite on-again, off-again co-op game, Killzone 3. it's off again. I think it might have even been last podcast we talked about that Killzone 3 was getting a co-op mode, and we reminisced about Killzone 2, facepalm moment, blah, blah, blah. We've done all that over and over again, and now we're back on, well, someone either jumped the gun or didn't know what they were talking about because Killzone 3 has no co-op mode. Okay. I don't know what's going on over there and how, like, I seriously think this is the third or fourth time that it's gone back and forth.
No, it was like, I don't know how you Dutch do things, but get your story straight.
Like, when it was announced, they mentioned that it was going to have co-op, and then it was like a week or two later, they're like, no, there's no co-op in this. And then just 2 weeks ago, they were like, well, yeah, there's this cool new four-player co-op mode in Killzone 3. And they're like, nah, not really. There's no co-op.
Yeah, and you know what? It's finally going to come out, and it's going to have, like, 16-player co-op, and no one will believe them. They'll see the menu option. They'll be like, ah, you got me.
Yeah.
It'll be like the, you know, Monkey Island 3, which was a 2D game, but it had to enable 3D effects in the menu. And you could you could never turn it on, but the game would keep taunting you about it.
That's funny.
Yeah. Deathspank actually has a menu achievement related to something like that, which is quite amusing.
Interesting.
There's a good slider and an evil slider. And if you slide the good all the way up and the evil all the way down, you get an achievement. Because you've vanquished the evil in the menu.
Nice.
Yeah, it cracked me up.
And finally, Body Count, which was a which is a game by the creator of Black.
Whose name is Stuart Black, and that amuses me.
I'm going to expand on this then, too, about Mr. Black. But they tweeted that there won't be any split-screen play in the game. The game, it doesn't have a co-op through the story, but it's going to have a separate co-op campaign, I believe. But Mr. Black just, he got his panties in a bunch, and he left the project, actually. This was being developed at Codemasters, actually, and he helped design the game and went through the whole process, and he was kind of like, it got to a point, he's like, I'm done here, see you guys. And then he moved on, and I guess he badmouthed some people then too.
Good lord!
I don't know if you've paid much attention the past like week or two. There has been a lot of developer smack talk going on Twitter and in the news. Just people trashing, like developers trashing other developers, and I don't know what's going on. Like, I've never seen it like this before.
Of Twitter.
I saw some folks kind of trash talking him, and then he was trash talking some folks, and you know, we saw Mark Green getting trash talked by some people, and it was just back and forth.
To be fair, Mark Green is kind of like the Candyman.
No, don't do it. we don't want to incur that wrath.
Okay.
We love you, Mark Green.
I love Mark Green too, but he has a tendency to appear.
Yeah, I know. And one story actually I didn't see you put on here. I don't even know. I don't think we might have posted about it yet. But EA announced a new Spore game.
That's right.
Which is actually not a Spore game.
It's Dark Spore.
It's called Dark Spore, and it's a four-player co-op RPG. And instead of collecting items in the game, you collect body parts to kind of customize your creature in the game.
Ugh.
So it's an interesting little concept. I'll be curious to see how it plays out. Right now, all they have is a couple like little screenshots, not showing much, and a teaser trailer. But that's supposed to hit next year.
It's no Diablo 3.
No, you know, it's kind of funny. I didn't think about it this way. Not even that Maxis is the same Maxis as they've ever been. But I said something to Kat about it. I was like, you know, this looks interesting. And it has a lot of potential. She's like, but when has Maxis ever done like anything action-oriented? It's like, true. They've really never created a quote-unquote action game.
It's probably a team from somewhere else within EA that is working with Maxis on it.
Exactly. but anyway, so that's the co-op news. Lots of goodies out there. I'm getting into this Halo mood lately. I think all the stuff that's going on, so I'm like itching for more Halo Reach goodies and really finding out some concrete details about what's going to be.
You're
going
to buy that console, aren't you?
No. I just bought the 360S, so I can't. I kind of wish. I wish I would have held off, but I wanted to take advantage of the GameStop trade-in thing.
Oh.
So which is why I got the S. Because they were offering. I got for my old Elite with a 20 gig drive, not even my 120 gig drive. I got $140.
That's so, not terrible.
Yeah, and then with a few other accessories and games, I ended up getting over 200 in credit towards the S. So. And then, of course, they use it as an excuse to write a review for the site.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
That's pretty much exactly how I did the PSP Go review last year. I was like, I don't know about this thing anymore, but this new one, you know, it's kind of shiny.
Exactly.
So I traded in my old one and all the games that I had, you know, completed and didn't really feel like going back to, and got more than enough credit to get the PSP Go. I still had like $100 left or something. Yeah. So I got, well, like, other games, too.
Yeah, I still had credit left over from when I traded my PlayStation portable as well towards the PSP Go.
My PSP Go is basically a Persona machine now. It's it's amazing.
You know what? I was playing on mine today a little bit. Red Star.
Yeah.
It's only $9.99.
Yeah,
so
but there's no co-op in that mode,
know,
in that version.
It's disappointing. It's still pretty fun.
It's a totally rad game, and I'm glad that it had a chance to, you know, get some more sales, because it's one of those things where, you know, this is going a little off topic, but the story behind that game is really sad, and it was basically something everybody had already played because the Xbox build was completed and got leaked. So yeah. Everybody with, you know, hacked Xboxes played the crap out of that game, and then it went dormant for like a year and a half, and then all of a sudden someone bought the rights to it, and it appeared on the PS2. And by the time it came out, the PS3 was already on the market,
Yeah. If
I remember correctly. So all the PS2 stuff was, you know, bargain basement prices, and I got my copy of it because it was in the bin at Best Buy right by the checkout lines. I'm like, Red Star, I know this game. $10, hell.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, so let's. We had a little bit of community discussion, and we highlighted a post here by Saber. He kind of, I'm going to summarize it here, but he basically talks about games like Blacklight Tango Down, which was just released, which is a multiplayer only game. There's no single player in it, and it as it being the focus. And he's saying that, you know, a lot of talk around the internet about a lot of games, like even Crackdown and Modern Warfare 2, the focus of it is on the multiplayer, but he's primarily a single player gamer, and he's wondering why there's all this focus on multiplayer. And what he says, why are games rated solely on this multiplayer mode, a mode that will be dead in a week? And I think he kind of actually maybe has it backwards, in that multiplayer is the reason why these games hang around a lot longer.
But when he's talking about stuff like Blacklight, it might be dead in a week.
Well, we'll look at maybe like Battlefield 1943 on Xbox Live. Like, that was a multiplayer-only game. No single player to be had. And it sold like gangbusters when it was released. And yeah, now it's pretty dead, but I had people on my friends list playing it, you know, 6 months after release. A lot of like single player only stuff right now, the trend is play the single player and go trade it in. Alan Wake, the DLC just came out, or no, it's coming out tomorrow or Tuesday.
Yeah.
So we had a few people post info about it on Colony of Gamers because they sent out review codes for that early. And a lot of people have been like, oh, I already traded that in. You know, the game's only been out 3 months, maybe. I think it was April came out.
I think it came out end of April, early May.
Or May, yeah. So not even...
It came out the same week as Red Dead, didn't it?
Yeah, so it was May. Yeah. You're right, so it was May. So it's only been 2 full months that game's been out, but everyone's already moved on. And now, you know, you have this more content coming for it. People are going to miss out on it. And they're like, well, I'll just pick it up later, and I'll get Alan Wake cheap, and then I'll get all the DLC and play it then, which is perfectly fine and stuff. But the multiplayer kind of tides people over between those kind of things. You know, I think when a game comes out, everyone immediately dives right into the single player and tries to pound through that as fast as they can, and then they they move over to the multiplayer.
Well, unless it's something like Modern Warfare. I have friends that play, like, they never touch the single player. They just play, they play like 400 hours of the multi already.
Yeah.
So, and really, I think games should be, the weight of a review should land on what the focus of the game is. Like, Crackdown as a single player game, I'm willing to admit, isn't that great, but as a co-op game, which is pretty much the intent of the developers for you to play it as, it's awesome.
Yeah.
So is it a mediocre single player game or is it an awesome co-op game? I mean, you gotta pick your battles.
Yeah. Yeah, my other question is, Saber, why are you primarily a single player gamer on Co-Optimus? Come on, multiplayer. Co-op gaming. So, I think you probably nailed it though there, is that games are reviewed on what their intent is, on what they advertise as their meat and potatoes.
Because I know Singularity just came out, and most everybody I know that's played it said it was, you know, a pretty fun single player game, and it has a multiplayer mode, but you wouldn't know it has multiplayer unless you talk to someone that bothered to play it.
Yeah.
And most people, you know, likened it to BioShock in their reviews. I haven't played it yet, but it must have a lot to owe to, you know, the BioShock series.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and that's probably another good example is BioShock 2. Game they added a multiplayer mode to, they tried to force it down people's throats because they wanted to, you know, obviously make money with DLC and stuff there. And it just, you know, people said it was fun. I played it a little bit. It was fun, but it wasn't something that was going to stand the test of time.
Yeah.
Because people play BioShock for the single player.
So this is jumping way off topic, but it just, you know, popped in my head. You know the prequel to Dead Rising 2?
Subject Zero or Case Zero or something?
Yeah, I think it's Case Zero. At Comic-Con today, they announced that was going to, is either today or yesterday, they announced it's going to be $5.
Yeah, except if you pre-order, right? I think you get it free if you pre-order.
Something like that, but I heard a lot of, you know, industry folks betting that it was going to be somewhere between 10 and 20, and probably towards the higher end of that spectrum, because I guess it uses the same engine and everything.
Yeah.
So they're like, well, they're going to want to help recoup development costs any way they can, so they'll obviously sell this for $15. And I was kind of pleased with that.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
Despite the fact that version doesn't have co-op, but
I played it at E3, and it's pretty fun. I mean, it's basically like they're real short little missions it gives you. Like they're like, here's a task, go do this, and you got to run through the hordes of zombies and go do whatever, and then come back to, you know, like the what I played. You were like centered in like this like tool shed or something.
Yeah,
and that was like your home base kind of a thing. So, it's a good way to get like warmed up too for Dead Rising 2.
Yeah.
You know, kind of get the good taste of it and do some things. And, you know, it's like another way to do a demo, kind of.
Well, don't say demo because then people will say, oh, it's a paid demo.
Yeah, we won't go there.
That's like saying Mark Rain 3 times.
Oh, be careful if that's the second time we've said
it. I know. I won't say it again.
I think that's about it from the community. We put up some, you know, we queried you guys on Twitter to see if you needed anything or had any questions, and you lazy bastards didn't say anything, so that makes our job easier.
Yeah.
So let's wrap things up here. We've been through a pretty meaty episode, and let's talk about some upcoming co-op releases, and a pretty big one this week, though.
Pretty it's big one?
Well, I'm saying pretty big in terms of co-op, because it's,
Yeah,
okay, but it's StarCraft 2, so
you know, it's 12 years coming or whatever. I mean, despite the fact that it's only got comp stomping, it's StarCraft 2.
Yeah, and, you know, and they put out the achievement list for this, and there's a lot of co-op-based achievements of, you know, different ways, different things to do. You know, there's going to be two versus two comp stomping, three versus three. They had some kind of like different balance style ones in there to earn achievements for. Plus, there's going to be all the customizations and stuff going on with the map editor. I pulled the trigger and pre-ordered the collector's edition on Wednesday or Thursday, Mark told me that the Amazon finally had it listed in stock, because it's kind of not in stock anywhere. So I went through and actually pulled the trigger on that for, I think it's $99. So we talked, I think, last episode about Blizzard's collector's editions and how awesome they are.
Can I have the WoW pets?
Yeah, you can.
Sweet.
unless they go for thousands of dollars on eBay.
Shut up.
And then the other co-op release is Castlevania Harmony of Despair on Xbox Live Arcade, which is the six-player co-op Castlevania game, and that is August 4th.
That is, I'm a huge Castlevania fan, and that's the one that Igarashi's been working on, not the 3D one with Patrick Stewart and the dude from Train Spotting. So I'm really interested in it, but it looks like they took the GBA levels and just said, okay, well, if you take this entire map and slap it out, it kind of makes a 1080p picture. So, all right, let's just stick everybody on it at once.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it. The screenshots, I don't know if that's just a really zoomed out look or if that's really how you play.
As far as I understand, you play a little more zoomed in, but you can see the castle around you.
Interesting.
As you're going through it, but it's from what I've seen, it's just it's basically like boss rushes.
Yeah.
Like you have a time limit to defeat a boss in this sector of the castle.
Yeah.
But, like I said, I'll still play it because I like Castlevania. And Igarashi, he carries a whip and has a rad hat.
It's got to be good.
Yeah.
So we had a bunch of reviews. We already talked about the Xbox 360S, posted a little review of that. I focused the review on the noise levels because that's the only quarrel I had with the original Xbox was it was a bit loud. So you can hear, I recorded a video of the noise difference. We had a review of Death Spank. We did a Beyond Co-op review for the month of July where we covered Monkey Island 2, Special Edition, Persona 3 Portable, Prince of Persia, The Forgotten Sands, Dark Star 1, Broken Alliance, and Singularity. Features, we had Co-op Casual Friday for Spectrum's Origins, Indiana Co-op and the Avian Undead apps, which focused on Tweet Defense and, I can't remember the other game.
It's blanking on me, but the screenshot had a football player, which
it was another zombie game.
Yeah,
we actually had a picture of Titanic on the site, not the ship sunken at the bottom of the ocean, but the Leonardo DiCaprio, Kate Winslet, King of the World.
I took a really extreme offense to this.
I was like, well, what the hell? So the editorial was called Near Far Co-op Wherever You Are, which is why that picture was there.
Oh, man.
And, of course, everyone that read that immediately had a stupid song stuck in their head. But it's an interesting editorial.
You know what song we're closing out the podcast with?
Oh, God. Sorry, everyone. Sorry, everyone right now. But the editorial is on open world co-op games and, how some games have you tethered to the player in a certain distance and other games let you go wherever. It kind of looks at both sides of that. We had a co-op classics for Superman the arcade game. I had no idea that game had co-op in it. So that was a pretty entertaining read. We had a Battlefield report looking at Sam Fisher's rad shooting stances, Jim is okay. Way into shooting stances and stuff. I had no idea there's names for ways you hold guns and shoot. That's pretty cool, and it's pretty awesome that developers actually pay that much attention in games. On the download, Kat talked about Ad Hoc on the Go, which is the PlayStation 3, PlayStation Portable mode for getting ad hoc games to work over the internet. And Tally launched her new monthly editorial on co-op MMOs. Well, most MMOs are co-op.
Right.
And she looked at Lord of the Rings Online. So you can look forward to that every month. She's going to focus on a different MMO kind of.
And there's enough bad Korean ones that she will never run out of MMOs to cover.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, the big free MMO thing is getting more and more popular. So we have a huge contest going on right now because we've added over 1,000 games to our database of co-op games.
That's a lot of co-op, Nick.
We're actually almost up to 1,100 games at this point, and we still have a backlog in our thing to research of about 40 games, maybe. So we're going to be well over 1,100 games, with more being added all the time. But yeah, so we got lots of fabulous prizes, t-shirts, we have headsets, we have signed copy of Dawn of War 2, copies of Crackdown 2, Metal Gear Solid, Peace Walker, and the big prize is a Xbox 360S with a copy of Crackdown 2.
How did we get this Xbox 360S, Nick?
That was generously given to us by Microsoft at E3, so all those people that said that you hated me because I got one, you're now getting it back. But you're not winning. I'm making sure I'm
The co-op revolution takes care of its soldiers.
Yeah, exactly. And actually today, a package showed up from some folks we did promotions with for Lost Planet 2. And they kind of just thanked us for doing stuff with them, and they gave us a few extra things they had. So we threw in Lost Planet 2, a water bottle, a t-shirt, and a little like Lego thing to make one of the little V mech things. I can't remember.
That's way cool.
So that's in there. And the other thing that was in it, but I kept it for Izzy, was, you know, that giant salamander boss?
Yeah.
Spiky thing that you go inside? There's a giant plushy version of that. So I gave it to Izzy. It's all black with big arms.
You know what Jade's first plushie is, right?
What's that?
I have a plush head crab.
Oh, jeez, that's awesome. So, yeah, so lots of good prizes there. Real easy to enter. Three ways you can get three chances to win, I should say. You can retweet the message that's in the post on Twitter. You can become a fan on Facebook, which is now called Liking. Or you can write a blog post in our user blog section about your favorite co-op game of all time. I haven't counted lately, but as of last week, we had about 60 people write blog posts about it. So
some good reading in there, too.
Yeah, there's some really good ones. I'm going to try and talk with Kat a little bit about this. She wants to kind of head this up, and maybe every month we'll do a blog post contest and give some goodies away and just have people blog about something. So we'll keep that tradition going. The deadline for that is July 30th, which is this coming Friday, and then I'll go through and figure out how to draw all these winners and stuff and get prizes out to everybody. That's about it. If you don't know, we have t-shirts now at our Split Reason affiliate store. You can find more info on that on the site. We have three different t-shirts. You know this feel about us in your nipples, and we caress them because of our t-shirts.
Gently.
Gently. Unless you want us to be rough, we can do that too.
Oh.
Oh,
oh my. Hey, Nick.
So, yeah.
Mark Rain.
Oh, no! Oh, jeez. Quickly, feedback on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter. We are Co-Optimist without the dash. Have a good evening. We have to get out of here before Mark Rain shows up.
Oh, God, he's here!